Well, hello everyone. I'm delighted to have with us today Joe Cowder, the former global CFO for the wholesale banking division of Wells Fargo. Joe joined us recently to be the co-chair of the CUO finance community. Indeed, actually, that co-chair means actually that we're looking to establish it. What we're looking today is the conversation with Joe, is really to take him on his career, from being a graduate through to many years at PwC and a couple of sort of interesting journeys through GE, et cetera, through to finally landing at Wells. The majority of Joe's career has been a very successful career at Wells, culminating, as I said, being the wholesale banking CFO. I'm really, Joe, be delighted to actually hear from you your own journey, and really where there was a pivotal point where maybe the COO finance or business management or CAO or that ambiguous role sitting next to the CFO start to become apparent in your mind in relation to its potential use. Because obviously the challenge that you and I both face now is that we have a bifurcated market where half the markets where the CFOs would have a finance COO or other, and they can't imagine life without one. And then the other half of the market is the CFOs where they do not have a COO finance or business manager, and they question the validity in why would you have one. So I think that if we could get to that point, possibly by that setting the agenda for the pending breakfast that we've got in New York with Société Générale hosting, we may be in good order ourselves to actually manage that debate. So Joe, welcome. And if I could hand the baton to you to take us on a potted journey through your own career to the point where actually a business manager might be quite useful.
Well, thank you, Maurice. I'm delighted to be here today, and I think this is a really exciting topic to talk about and very timely. So I started my career back as I graduated from the University of North Carolina. I started at Price Waterhouse in Washington, D.C., back when it was not quite PwC yet. I had a number of financial services clients. I worked on the World Bank, the Federal Home Loan Banking System, et cetera. Very great opportunity to get involved at early days of complex accounting for derivatives, for securitizations, et cetera. I did a brief overseas stint over in Europe for a couple of years and worked on a lot of IPOs and stuff, and ended up back in the PW National Office, which was up in New York. The National Office was a technical type role where we were working with standard setters and field offices to answer the most complex technical questions they may have. I left PwC in 1999 and went to work for GE Capital, which was the financial services arm of the General Electric Company. It was a fast-growing, rapidly evolving organization that was a non-banking financial institution that did all sorts of different financial products. They had 28 different lines of business, mostly asset-based finance type activities, although they did have some large insurance activities and some other, they had private equity business, etc., lots of other things that I got involved in. It was a great opportunity. GE was a great place to learn, got the chance to go up to a lot of their management development courses in Crotonville, got a chance to meet Jack Welch and Jeff Immelt and all of those legendary leaders, and it was a great experience being at GE. Very process focused, and I really learned a lot about process. I started learning about process and operations while at GE. I then left GE and went down to take a role at a bank called Wachovia. Wachovia was at the time the fourth largest bank in America, and in the financial crisis, it was acquired by Wells Fargo, which, when they were combined, became the, depending what metric you look at, the second or third largest bank in America at the time. My initial role there was in the accounting side. I ran a lot of different accounting functions. I had accounting policy, parts of reporting, controls and governance, et cetera. It was basically like a deputy controller job. I was the right-hand person to the controller. I did that job for about 3 or 4 years. I think this is the role where I very first started understanding the real importance of having a operational person dedicated in the controller function. In Wells, we had a person who was in charge of operational accounting. And when there was operational matters, this was the person who squared off against the other COOs around the organization. And we were very effective in that team in always making sure that that group was integrated in whatever initiatives or agenda that was going on across the company and within the individual businesses. I moved over to become the controller of the wholesale banking division. The wholesale banking division, which was the largest, most complex division in Wells, involved every business that touched a corporate customer. So it involved what most businesses would call your corporate and investment bank, and then also all of our commercial lending businesses. And so those totaled about a $900 billion balance sheet, Maurice, and we made anywhere from $10 to $13 billion in net income a year, depending on what was going on that year. So it was very complex. We had over 2,000 legal entities we had to deal with, and we had a global footprint and operated in Europe and Asia, you know, across South America, across lots of different geographies. That role was where I really began to feel the intense need to have a COO in finance. At that line of business level in the controller shop, we did not have our own COO. There was no finance COO reporting to the division, you know, the divisional CFO. And so it fell on each individual leader within that team to run their own operations. And that's where I started feeling the stress of being on a large number of different, for example, IT steering committees and having to attend just hours and hours of meetings that dove deep into the operational complexity of the organization, which was a great learning experience for me. However, it definitely took time away from those areas where I was most skilled at and where I could have brought the most value to the organization. It became apparent to me that I would have been better served to have somebody who could have taken some of that off my plate and been able to focus more on what my core competencies really were. Although I will admit I did learn a lot from doing those roles, from doing those activities. There was one or two other roles, but I quickly then became the CFO of the wholesale division. And when I was in the CFO division, that really crystallized the need for this COO role. At the time, we at Wells had hired a COO for finance across the whole company. So there was one individual who really didn't have a team who was the COO of finance for all of Wells, all five divisions. And as you can imagine, one person without a team, they were spread very thin. And to some extent, that role became a bit of an administrative role in terms of coordinating operational type activities, but not actually executing them. Those were still left to the individual finance teams. So, for example, me and my team in wholesale. So what I did was, although I wasn't, you know, technically allowed to have a finance COO, I hired a very talented woman to be I think the title we gave her was, you know, international and I can't remember the other part of it, you know, CFO. But really what she was our operational COO for the whole of the finance function. And, you know, the skill set that she brought to the table was she had a lot of process experience. She had a very good IT experience. She had been involved in numerous big projects, big initiatives across her career that involved implementation of systems, involved integration of businesses when you do M&A, that involved day one build outs for new supports for new products and services. So she had all the right skills. And where Maurice, where that really came to a head, where her value really was shown, was during the during the pandemic, when there were numerous operational requirements put on all banks, but specifically in finance, whether it be the day one being able to support people in a remote environment that had a lot of of activities related to it. But then once the government got involved with some of the programs that they launched to help businesses around the country provide them support during the pandemic. In the U.S., we had a program called the PPP lending program, but there were two or three others, and they were all implemented very quickly. And it was largely an operational exercise to build out these brand new lending programs that had all sorts of detailed requirements from the government and do it basically in, you know, a couple of weeks and get them launched and you know, with zero, you know, expectation with zero defects. And so that, you know, my COO, I'll call it that, and her team were instrumental in our ability to effectuate that and get that built out in a way that was satisfactory to the organization and to the government and met all the requirements.
Thanks for that, Joe. So it's interesting, we go back to a COVID, you actually identified your first sort of touch point was where you had some, I think you called it sort of accounting policy or someone on the horizontal who was basically also the contact to the other COOs across the bank as well in relation to almost like creating an efficient communication channel from, say, the finance division to other divisions. I do recall there's one bank that had an embedded finance COO, and then the new CFO came in who had not had a finance COO and therefore got rid of that position and that office. And when you speak to individuals now at that organization, the key refrain you get is from the other COOs, the COO to the heads of BOP, or the market COO, or the regional COO. They all say what they miss is the very efficient targeted channel into the CFO's office, that they don't have a go-to person now to actually gain the attention of or question the CFO. So that resonated with me when you said that. The other thing, when one of the things comes up when they're talking about a, you know, finance COO or business manager or CAO, whatever we call it, is obviously the cost. But actually from what you're saying is, but actually you can weigh that against the opportunity cost. So I think correct me if I'm wrong, that you're saying that on this journey, you recognize that you found yourself spending an inordinate amount of time sitting in committees and either technology or compliance or other, where actually your time could be better positioned in relation to being your role as the divisional CFO, looking outward and looking more, working more with more of the business, because so much of what a COO does is in the internal, very important, but the internal plumbing and the internal works, which actually you could invest in someone who's going to be a cost, but the benefit of that is it frees up your time to add greater value to the bank. Was my understanding correct in that?
Maurice, that's absolutely right. You know, I think it's penny wise but pound foolish to conclude that the incremental cost of a finance COO isn't worth their value. Not only the point you made, which was that, you know, the CFO is a very strategic role in any organization and should be partnering really close with the front end of the business to ensure delivery of all the results on both revenue and cost. And there's lots that go into that. And it's very time consuming if you have a large business that requires, that has a lot of geographies. You should be traveling. You should be in front of your people. All the things that being a good leader requires. The other benefit, though, I think that may get lost is when you think about operational decisions that get made in your business, think about how many dollars are spent on IT decisions or workarounds or consulting projects or, you know, where maybe similar activities are going on in multiple places in the organization and they could be consolidated into a single activity where something could better be outsourced or offshored, et cetera. All of those things I just mentioned are heavy lifts and require someone who really knows what they're doing and has deep experience and can spend a majority of their focus on those activities to ensure the best outcomes and the most cost-efficient outcomes. When you take those activities and layer them on to all of the other expectations and job requirements of a CFO, I would argue that you were going to end up with maybe more suboptimal outcomes than you would if you had somebody who was experienced, dedicated, and focused in those areas and would probably make better decisions as opposed to maybe quicker decisions a CFO might make because they have to get on to the next thing.
I remember asking one CFO the value of their COO, and he said, the less I hear from my COO, the better that COO is. And actually what she meant was that if you've got someone very competent in that position where you've got inbuilt trust in their ability to handle certain aspects, then if you give them the authority to do so, and that authority just isn't in an org chart, but in how you position it, how you verbalize that position, how you relate it, that's from my CEO, go to my CEO. My CEO has signed off on this. That then actually will elevate you in relation to doing what you want to do. But I think trust is a very important component part on that. But then if I just want to narrow down in relation to that, I think from my understanding that you had various views of seeing a value of having this right-hand person. Let's not call it the COO at the moment, because I think that's one of the problems. People say, COO, what's that, option tech? Isn't there one COO? As opposed to actually, whether it's the chief administration officer, COO, or a business manager, for the void of any contention, you could say, take this business management function. So you went on this journey in relation to by osmosis of this office being created and pulling in certain tasks. If you were then going to go in to be a CFO now and you were going to, rather than your experiences where you've created this position by osmosis, and then if you're going to go into a position now and say, I'm going to design and I'm going to attribute, am I going to allocate responsibilities to a finance COO, how would you categorize that? And I'm going to jump in as you're going through this, because I actually think a high percentage of what a finance COO does is exactly the same as many of the other COOs supporting a senior executive running a global function or other. And therefore, it's to a degree the skill set can to a degree be agnostic for whether it's operations or it's technology or it's the market COO. So I'm just wondering, so here's the script. Congratulations, Joe. You are now appointed global CFO of Giant Core. And you're going to go, fine, the first thing I need to do is appoint a finance COO. And your CEO goes, okay, Joe, but what's that person going to do for you?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm remiss if I didn't bring up the point that, which I'm sure you know, that every organization defines their COO function a little differently. So I would start with, well, let me get a good understanding of the new organization's COO structure and what it is they actually do and don't do, because I think it's important to try to stay aligned with that existing framework. Now, within that framework, there will almost certainly be certain things that that this person would be in their job requirements. You know, the first thing I would start with is, you know, IT system selection and implementation. Those are complex areas that finance often plays a big role in. And when I say IT selection and implementation, it's not just finance systems I'm referring to. There's so much connectivity and downstream connectivity, upstream and downstream in any large bank's IT systems environment. So I'll give you an example. If you're building a new credit, if you're implementing a new credit system or selecting a new credit system, well, that new credit system is almost certainly going to have to feed lots of information and data into some sort of warehouse or maybe even directly into the ledger, et cetera, or certainly other different subsystems in finance. And so if there was a a big project going on in credit, there would be a finance representative on that committee that was ensuring that finances needs were included in the in all the requirements that were developed for that system and would build out, and that the activity worked and built out in a way that was that with the right level of governance and controls, et cetera. Now that could, that goes up and down the organization. Collateral management. I'm just throwing some things out. You go into derivatives or into trading activities, trading systems, and other types of similar activities. There's so much that there's almost nothing that happens in the front end of a business that doesn't have downstream implications. So you can imagine a big bank, that is a constant evolving dynamic area where I think that the COO will be the point person on that, on those types of activities. They're time consuming, they are difficult and require a certain skill set, and are, I think, perfect for a COO to take on. I think the second area, which is somewhat related, is new product development and new service development. When large banks, especially going to the capital markets areas, products are constantly evolving, changing to market needs, to customer needs, et cetera. One of the differences between commercial banking and, say, consumer banking is much more regulated. It's very homogenous, what a mortgage loan looks like, et cetera. You go over to commercial banking and everything's bespoke, customized, the market's constantly changing, et cetera. You need a person who can work with the business, work with the plug in to the the initiatives that are being driven through the line of business COO functions to launch those new products and bring finance's voice to the table and their needs, and make sure their needs are involved. There's any number of different other places you can go with this. But there tends also to be a lot of, in today's world, one-off type of things that either come from regulators or that come from maybe just the top of the house because a specific need has come up. And it's the operational part of that that the COO would be accountable for. So, I can think of situations where in some of our European operations, there were some new EU directives that came out that required, us, the bank, to build out new capabilities to deliver information that we had not historically delivered. There were requirements related to privacy. There were requirements related to tax and other things that had, complex operational components to them, and that finance was directly implicated in. And so those were areas where I think those one-off type things are other areas where finance COOs can play a big role.
So I think what we're going to do is come on to a minute. If you then start to define what the COO finance does, obviously that then defines the competence and the experience of what you need to be an effective COO. If we then say, so operations, technology, program management, transformation, something like that for me, pound for pound, you think that's where a COO function can have a direct impact in relation to efficiencies and cost, and also giving you then creating the operational uplift in relation to giving you time. So that's two, that's one, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
So if then we then look at, I see the COO function as being the horizontal running across all the verticals. And so you've got your head of product control, you've got your financial control, you've got your regional CFOs, et cetera. But the other things I'd sort of imagine that, and I'm interested in your point of this, that you could put into the COO's office would be, and I think very important now post pandemic, would be human capital. either from a how resilient is the leadership team or layered down in relation to what the CFO got? What is your attrition? What are your future plans in relation to human capital? How do you see this as what's the risk profile of your people at the moment? What is the level of investment you're having in relation to driving efficiency? My view is that throughout the pandemic, first of all, the COO in all areas was thrown up onto the platform with centralized visibility because they were the natural go-to person to coordinate everything. But also there has been a shift away from, yes, the role of HR is very important, but we've seen a shift in relation to a lot of the communications and a lot of the imperative nature of the decisions around human capital has moved into the COO's office either at company level or at divisional level. Did you, in your own business management role, or the CEO, you had a group COO for finance, did human capital rest within the COO's mandate, or do you think it should do if it didn't?
So in my experience, Maurice, the answer generally it was no, but I would say that the COO function at Wells was in Wells Finance was still a little immature when I was there, and not that it couldn't take on more of a human capital role, but I would make an exception for that in terms of we were looking to create more centers of excellence and across the bank, and then take activities which were common, reconciliations, for example, or one example, collateral management is another example, et cetera. And we were trying to centralize them, consolidate technology, and consolidate the teams into one high-performing team with a common set of IT systems as opposed to disparate teams with disparate systems. And oftentimes when we did that, you know, there was a multi-step process, you know, one combined technology, two combined technologies, three, then we would look to right locate. Let's just call it right locate. Sometimes it was, you know, centralizing them in a low cost area in the US. Sometimes it was taking them offshore. Sometimes it was offshoring to a third party who could do it cheaper. So that within Wells was in the COO's mandate, the finance COO's mandate.
Okay. Now, no particular order, third-party vendor management. You know, it could be the engagement with a consultancy.
Yeah.
It could be an outsource agreement. Yeah, the whole myriad in relation to you, your division, your finance function, using an external third-party vendor.
Absolutely within the scope of COO role. It's an area that people probably neglected for a long time, but has certainly become much more front and center in the minds of the U.S. banking regulators, and I think the EU banking regulators as well, and they put much more focus on it. And I think it is an area that lends itself to being within the scope of a role of a finance COO.
I think actually there's so much focus historically around the procurement relationship and the cost. But I feel that what we've certainly, when we looked at the recent work we've done with the COO community, and in fact, we had a 2-day summit last week on this, that third party vendor management has now become really a key component part of the non-financial risk taxonomy.
Oh, and yeah. Well, there have been some very high profile losses that have occurred where companies have had to pay out big settlements and big fines to the regulators and to customers, et cetera, because a third party vendor didn't, you know, meet the standards that they said they would. And then there was nobody, you know, that it was just based on trust. Nobody was looking over that third party vendor's shoulder to make sure they were in fact meeting those standards. So it is very important.
So therefore, like the centralization of that, make sure that yes, you're going to have a better manage on cost, but actually you're managing the risk profile on behalf of the whole finance function, on behalf of the CFO more effectively.
Yeah, just like you'd be managing it if it wasn't within your, if you were doing it in-house.
Right. So then if we take the extension then from third-party vendor risk into the broader category around controls and operational controls and operational risk, and then non-financial risk, whatever we call whatever falls into that. Historically, even before talking about does this or should this fit within the COA finance? Obviously, I'm a bit of a closed question. I'm going that direction. But when you've gone, when you've seen the evolution of your career and the importance of managing operational risk, and then really when you look around non-financial risk now, sort of like the spectrum of pandemic, that's, that was a comprehensive failure of the imagination by all from a risk perspective. The consequences of geopolitical risk, what happened in Ukraine and Russia, you know, they all tie into reputational risk. And they all manifest themselves ultimately in a financial consequence, or risk. So where the journey of how you've seen operational risk managed and where it's come to now of whether you think therefore it will be better positioned within finance COO's office or not. Just wonder whether you could just take us on a journey of your consideration of operational risk within a context of a finance function.
So, you know, I, just like every other young accountant finance person coming up through the ranks, you know, when you're early in your career, you're worried about financial risk and reporting, financial reporting risk and financial reporting controls and governance. But as my career developed, and especially at Wells had some well-publicized operational risk flows over in the consumer side. But there were, obviously, if you look around the industry, there's a lot of those. Operational risk, I think of it as like, it's like an octopus, Maurice. It's got tentacles that reaches, that reach across the organization to every group. It's very, in terms of who, I actually think my experience, my personal experience was that, operational risk needs to be centralized and mandated somewhere, in the organization, probably in the risk function. However, there's a big tentacle of that that reaches into finance. And accordingly, the COO in finance should be accountable for certain aspects of operational risk that are closest to finance in terms of their ability to manage. I don't know if the COO of finance should be responsible for Salesforce behavior, yeah, or you know, or things like that. But there are plenty of other areas where they could put in operational finance where they could play a big role.
So they sort of almost like operational risk oversight or overall governance, the governance framework, as opposed to you can't have accountability or responsibility for it, but getting a handle on and presumably then working with non-financial risk or operational risk or whatever the focuses are across group as well to make sure you're in line with and actually feeding it, that they're feeding into you their own thoughts around bank-wide risk.
Yeah, well, Maurice, way I look at it is you can take operational risk and bifurcate it into 8, 10, 12 buckets. And there's probably 4 or 5 buckets, 3 or 4, whatever the number is, that make a lot of sense for finance to have a lot of oversight over. And there are some of those buckets that maybe don't have a lot, make a lot of sense for finance to have oversight over. And every business and bank defines it slightly differently. But there certainly are areas of operational risk, management of, you know, of management of assets, management of collateral would be one, that would be a good one. Trader, you know, product control is really about what, you know, looking over the shoulders, operational risk of traders, right? So obviously trader behavior would be one that would be in there. Lots of different, you know, netting and other operational type of activities that occur. I could probably think of a half a dozen other if you gave me time, but there's certainly a robust list of activities, of operational risk activities that that the finance COO should be accountable for.
There's certainly a point of debate and the breadth. Yes. Yeah. I actually think if I look at the pie chart of a COO, yeah, and then maybe, and also then finance COO, year in, year out, you probably have, you would have all this, the retention, the responsibilities, operations technology and talent management and operational risk. But the, depending on what's going on with that organization and the markets and the global economy, the weighting of your time allocated to one of those pieces of your pie is going to change. Two other areas then, and I think, well, then I want to take it towards some form of conclusion, even if it is that we don't have a conclusion. You mentioned component parts of regulatory management or regulatory enforcement. Would you put that within the auspice of the business management function or the office of the finance CEO on behalf of the CFO?
Yes, absolutely. I think that when I don't know if I've ever seen a significant regulatory matter that didn't have multiple aspects to satisfying that matter, and they all have a operational deep, probably generally the biggest part, an operation, you know, component. So someone has to be managing the various different workflows. There might be some sort of technical component. There might be some sort of risk component. There might be some sort of workflow component. But at the end of the day, all of those need to be managed and kept in line and ensured. You know, you make commitments to regulators as to your plan of when what you're going to do and when you're going to do it and how it's going to get done and its level of effectiveness. And I think a COO is a perfect area for that activity. You know, management of regulatory issues is a perfect place for that to be managed.
So essentially, Tim, when I've got the feeling if we've seen the weighting of this role, that if you're trying to articulate to a non-believer of a financier, or maybe say call it like that, and then sort of really moving towards what are the conclusions here, that if I'm listening to you on the benefits, there's the benefit is actually you don't realize the value of a finance CEO function until you've got one, and actually how much time that creates for you to actually dedicate to what is the core component parts of your role. If I just summarize my thoughts, and I'm quite happy for you to torpedo and pick apart. Secondly is actually the value in relation to having someone own cross-divisional initiatives, aligned operations and technology, will realize operational and cost efficiencies. They will have to, because they've got a single lens focused on it. I think also the shift from the shift in importance in relation to managing people, human capital management, you know, your operating model, your operational resilience from a people perspective, that is, whilst you've got very senior people, head of product control and head of financial control, et cetera, that giving a single lens on behalf of the COO across their organization in context to that will build in some resilience. The point that I brought out is the other benefit is raising the efficiency of communication channels in and out of the CFO's office can be managed more effectively through this single point, to the benefit of not just the CFO, but probably more to the benefit of the other principal functions in the bank, be it in the business or compliance or legal or operations. So that there's different channels of benefit that be created by creating this centralized hub. And it's almost like therefore you almost have two pie charts. And from what listened to you then, Joe, you've got one, if you're the pie chart, you've got, say, program management, technology, operations and change. Probably need to delve into that more, but somewhere in that space. You've got human capital management, regulatory management, your risk and controls or operational risk or non-financial risk, however we define it. And I suppose the only one I was thinking now lastly is whether you would empower or work with your finance CEO in relation to strategy for the function. And that could be anything from nearshoring, offshoring, outsourcing, new principal investments, et cetera, within. So just the last, if I can then come in with, am I going off piece in relation to that broad-based summary? And what sort of comments have you got where we've worked, the conclusions I'm drawing from your observations?
No, I think you pretty much have it down, Maurice. With respect to the strategy, absolutely. Given the all of the different aspects of the operational role that we have discussed here today, it would make you'd be remiss if you didn't then bring that individual that role into the discussions about strategy, but in my personal view, not only I would bring them in, I'd also bring the other members of my team in as well. But that person would have a big voice in that conversation, given their, all the things that are within their purview. The one thing I would just throw out there is that one thing I've seen, no matter where I've worked, when I talk to some of my peers in the industry, they've mentioned this too, is that because finance CFO teams get so bogged down with a lot of the things that we just talked about putting into the COO role, that they can't deliver the strategic finance that the business folks really need because their time is constrained. And therefore, the businesses will oftentimes hire shadow finance folks out into the business. I believe the structure that we've talked about today with a robust finance COO function should help alleviate the need for that. And if you are smart and aggressive in the way you execute it, you know, part of the cost savings would be, yeah, you may have to invest a little bit more resources into the COO function, but part of the offset should be reduction in the shadow finance resources which are in the line of business.
Thank you, Joe. Joe, thank you very much indeed for your thoughts. We will now gather these and we will share these with those that you and I will be gathering in New York in mid-March to talk around the role of the finance COO. I think what would be good to do, Joe, if you're happy to do so, we could then reconvene and see whether our broad-based conclusions, how they resonated or how they were questioned at that breakfast. And I think what would also come out of that is actually, so if we've got broad agreement that if you had a finance COO, this is what he or she would be responsible for, what sort of competences are you going to be looking for that person to be effective? Yeah. You know, because I question whether they have to be a qualified accountant to be an effective finance CEO. Yeah, I mean, it could be a benefit, but I don't think necessarily listening to this myriad of things that we're looking at, whether they need to be. But actually, that may be a point of debate.
Yeah.
So, Joe, thank you very much indeed. Any closing comments, sir?
No, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to talk about this topic, and I look forward to the upcoming breakfast that we're going to have.
I look forward to it as well. Really looking forward to it, Joe. Thank you very much indeed for your time, and have a fine rest of the day, sir. We're almost done at this ending in the UK.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.